received my doctorate on the 14th of June, 1970. I was walking across the stage at Cobo Hall in Detroit, having just completed my doctorate from Wayne State University and the University of Michigan. At that same instant, while they handed me my sheepskin, if you will, the baton was passed. Dr. Abraham Maslow passed away in Menlo Park, California. And Dr. Maslow had been very influential in my life as a young doctoral student and encouraged me to take the message of self-actualization, the idea that there are certain people who reach exalted levels of consciousness. And he said almost directly that he had written about these ideas and explained them to the academic world. Now, you take them out and explain it and make it available to the cab drivers and to the school teachers and to the dentists and to the housewives and to everyone and anyone that will listen. And one of the things that he said about these people that he described in Toward a Psychology of Being was that these people who reach these higher levels of consciousness, number one, are independent of the good opinion of other people. It is something that you have to learn and practice and teach people. He also encouraged me, whenever you are trying to help anybody else, whether it's in an audience such as this today, whether it is as a parent talking to a child, whether it is you speaking to someone in a helping profession, as a nurse, as a physician, whatever, that if you want to help another human being, you take the amount of time that you have, and you only allow a very small percentage of it to be contained on the problem. Do not talk to people about their problems, unless you want their problems to continue to manifest and show up after they leave the helping encounter. Instead, shift your attention off of what it is that is the thing that you call a problem, and instead put it onto the solution on what you intend to manifest and how you intend to create what it is that is missing in your life. Leave them and have them leave the helping encounter with an awareness that there is something that they can do. There's always some possibility. One of the secrets, if you will, that I have in this little book that has just been published called 10 Secrets for Success and Inner Peace says that you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it. And you have to look at everything that exists in your life that constitutes a problem and recognize that something in your inner world allowed it to show up in your life. And if you want to change whatever that might be, that is the state of your physiology, that is the absence of abundance, that is the quality of your relationships, or anything else. If you want it to change, if you want it to shift, you have to learn that great secret, that you can't solve a problem with the same mind that created it. And as I was talking to the people at PBS about some of these kinds of ideas, and they were just halting in their enthusiasm, let me put it that way, so that I don't say anything negative, because I don't want to attract negative into my life, I decided to put up my own money and to encourage the people at Hay House, Louise Hay's publishing firm, which I have just moved to. All of my work is now done through this publishing house. We put out two shows. And the two shows were called How to Get What You Really, 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 Really Want and Improving Your Life Using the Wisdom of the Ages. And I did what scurvy elephants do. I did the same thing that I did back in 1976 when I wrote a little book called Your Erroneous Zones and was told by all of the people that you can't get on the Tonight Show with books like this, and Phil Donahue doesn't really want to hear about you anymore, and these kinds of things, that I went out and took it to the world, because I was told the only way you can reach America is to go on national television and speak to everybody in America. But that's only one way to reach everybody in America. The other way to reach everybody in America is to go to everybody in America. Takes a little longer. But the real test of what it is that you are able to manifest and attract into your life isn't what you are willing to do. It isn't what you're willing to do. It doesn't matter how long that list is of what you're willing to do. The question is, what are you unwilling to do? And that has to be a list with nothing on it. And most of us are not willing when it comes right down to what it takes in order to attract into our lives what it is that has been missing. We have something that, we have a line. We have a place that we draw that line. And we say, I can't go to that. I can't do that. I can't leave where I was born. I can't leave this city. I can't change jobs. I can't. And the minute that you put something on your list of what you're unwilling to do, you attract everything into your life that you're unwilling to have. Because what we think about is what expands. And so we went out and I took that show and I came here to Chicago. And I went to Los Angeles and to New York and to Boston and to Atlanta and to Dallas and to Houston and to San Francisco and San Diego. In fact, I went to 114 markets across the country at my own expense. And public television was really believing, and they still do, that I'm out there raising money for PBS. That's what they think I'm doing. And that's fine because it is one of the things that I'm doing. But that's not what my intention is about. My intention is to use the frequencies that are on the public television network in prime time and at 2 o'clock in the morning and at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and at 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays. I have been blessed to have these frequencies available to me to help to raise the consciousness of this country. And that's what I'm doing on public television. And people have been responding. And those first two shows, after we finished 114 station visits, from city to city to city to city, back and forth, going on between the breaks, encouraging people to purchase whole enchiladas. Thank you. You're the one. I appreciate that. No, you're more than the one, because at the end of that two-year run for those shows, we had raised $18.5 million for public television, which is the largest amount of money ever raised by two lecture shows in public television's history, going back to Leo Biscaglia and John Bradshaw and so on. And then we decided to do another two shows. And those two shows I presented to PBS, but this time when we made the presentation, they sent a limo. Things had changed dramatically. And we went and we had a meeting and I asked them if I could tape the show in Concord, Massachusetts. And they said, you can tape the show anywhere you want. And we went to Concord, the place where the energy of the meeting that is here today probably began here in America. Because you can walk down the streets of Concord and you can walk into Bronson Alcott's home. And Bronson Alcott was a great spiritual teacher back in the 1840s and 50s. His daughter was Louisa May, who wrote Little Women and so many great novels. And when you walked outside of Bronson Alcott's home and you went next door to the Alcotts lived Nathaniel Hawthorne, one of the great writers in American history. And if you walk out of Hawthorne's home and down the street and make a left, and take a left on the next street, right in back of that lived Henry David Thoreau. And two streets over from Thoreau and seven houses down lived Ralph Waldo Emerson. All at the same time. And right around the corner from Emerson lived Julia Ward Howe. And on and on and on it went. The American Philosophical Society began there in Concord. And here were people living at that time who, you know, I had dinner with my mom just two nights ago. My mother will be 87 on her next birthday. And you know that when my mother was born, women in America couldn't vote? One generation.